Design can be a powerful tool to manipulate people's choices, maybe even voters' choices. Well, think of a supermarket. They put the milk in the back, so you have to cruise past all the other merchandise to pick up a gallon. The Us Weeklies sit by the register, you know, to capture impulse buyers. It's a subtle but powerful technique known as choice architecture, well known to retailers and increasingly utilized everywhere from the ballot box to the bathroom to affect and improve our behavior. University of Chicago law professor Cass Sunstein co-authored a new book on the power of choice architecture called Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness. And he joins us now. Hi, Cass.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Do you want to nudge those 11% of voters in Pennsylvania towards any candidate?
I do. Senator Obama was a colleague of mine for a long time, so I'm loyal to my friend.
But let's start off here. Let's start off in front of a urinal, Cass, if you don't mind. I'm told that when a man stands before a urinal, his mind can wander, which can lead to, you know, unfocused and negative consequences. Is that right?
Spillage. So we guys, when we're there, we think about baseball or football or our jobs, and sometimes we don't aim properly. It's true.
So this airport in Amsterdam came up with a clever solution. What was that?
Amsterdam decided to nudge guys by putting a black fly, not a real black fly, but an imaginary black fly, etching it in the urinal. And when guys see the fly, and there may be an evolutionary explanation for this, they aim properly. So this little intervention reduced spillage by 80%.
Wow, 80.
Yeah, huge effect.
Men cannot resist a target.
No, men aim with a target. And it had one of the great small interventions in the last few years.
So Cass, this is an example of choice architecture, how design influences the decisions people make. Like, you talk about how school cafeterias can get kids to eat more healthfully simply by rearranging how they display their meal options.
Yeah, when we were first thinking about choice architecture, we thought that it was probably the case that if you're interested in getting kids to eat fruits and vegetables rather than chocolate and Fritos, you could probably design the options in a way that would nudge them in the directions you wanted. And we actually proposed this in an academic paper. It's now developed in the book. And I heard in the midst of working on the book that the UK government under Tony Blair had actually implemented this proposal in school cafeterias. And the result was kids were eating much healthier in Britain than they had been before.
And is the basic idea in that situation to put the more healthful things like fruits and vegetables front and center?
Yeah. If the kids encounter something that looks like an orange, but it's not, and it actually is an orange, but it and it's first, then they might grab it. Whereas if they see the chocolate or the meat first, they'll grab that and the orange will come late.
Why, Cass? Why are people so susceptible to these nudges? They seem so simple.
Well, a lot has to do with human attention. So the reason the guys aren't that careful when they, you know, is that their attention wanders. If the fly's there, then their attention is kind of fixed. When we go into a supermarket or a cafeteria, what we see first often has an impact on our choices. So we evolved so as to respond pretty well to what's first on our view screen. But things that are kind of long-term, that involve 5 years from now, or that even are 40 feet away, we're not as attentive to. And good companies and good governments can use this.
You also write about these ambient orbs that are distributed by a power company in California.
Yeah, if you think about environmental problems or the climate change problem, I mean, wonder why is it that we're having such a hard time with some of these problems. So a sharp company in California decided it would give people this thing, the ambient orb, where it glows green and light and pleasingly if you're not using much energy. If you're doing a lot, it starts glowing red. And this had a huge effect on people's energy use.
Now, let's talk about the default option. You write in your book, never underestimate the power of inertia, because when in doubt, people basically do nothing, which can be a problem when the doubt is over choices on, say, a 401k plan, right?
Yeah, this got me going first when I got free subscriptions to a bunch of magazines a few years ago, really bad magazines, but it was free. So I said, okay. And now many years later, I'm still subscribing to the magazines and they're not so free anymore. I pay. That's because inertia has kicked in and making that phone call and trying to get someone actually to pay attention to me as I cancel is not worth the bother. So I may be an extreme case with respect to these magazines, but human beings are like this. When there's something that happens or a default that kicks in when you don't do anything, that has a huge impact. So Americans aren't saving up for the retirement to go from not that important issue to one that really matters. People aren't saving up for retirement. The savings rate in the U.S. is around zero, actually. One way to get people to save more is to say, once you work here, you're automatically enrolled in a savings program. If you don't like it, you can opt out. Since the default is some percentage of people's wages are going to savings, they are accumulating lots of money in those programs, and they've actually caught on like wildfire. They're doing a lot of good.
Cass, what's your definition of a bad magazine?
Well, I used to like People magazine,
yeah.
But since it's starting to cover some of the stars I don't like as much as the other stars, I don't like it quite as well as I used to. Admittedly, it's got virtues, but it's kind of bad.
And yet you still haven't canceled.
Haven't canceled People, no. Well, maybe I like it. Maybe I like it. Okay, you've got me.
Now, how does this idea of choice architecture impact the notion of free will? I mean, if our decisions are subtly influenced by design factors about which we may not even be aware, are we really choosing as freely as we'd like?
It's a great point, and probably we are more manipulated by context than we think, but there are limits on, fortunately, on how much we can be manipulated. So if you get a cell phone that has a bunch of really ridiculous default options, so the plan is really expensive and the phone doesn't work right unless you do a lot of tinkering, then that company's going to go out of business. If there's a cafeteria that decides it really wants kids to eat a lot of asparagus and puts the asparagus up front, chances are kids will eat a little more asparagus, but not a huge amount. So the environment can shift us in significant ways, but usually our tastes will matter a lot. So here's another one for you. The candidate who's listed first on the ballot gets a boost in the just because people see that name first. And if you're undecided, one of those significant percentage of people in Pennsylvania, the first candidate on the list matters. Sometimes the boost is up to 3 to 4%. And
wow.
Considering how close some of the elections are, that's a big deal. But if you had good candidate, and let's just stipulate that Obama is good, and then you had some other candidate, let's stipulate, we're not speaking of Senator Clinton, who's really bad, you can't get the voters go for the bad candidate by having, say, Hitler first and Obama second. So free will does matter. It's just that we can be manipulated some in a way that often will lead us in either good directions or bad ones.
You describe choice architecture as a potential third way to do government that's between capitalism and socialism. Do you really see it as a political system?
Yeah, I really do. And I think socialism, fortunately, isn't with us much. But one thing that is with us a lot is mandates and bans, which liberals have liked. And conservatives often say, free markets, free markets, free markets, exclamation point. Sometimes, like, think of the ambient orb, which has gotten people to cut down on energy use, or think, if only just for a second, about the Amsterdam urinal. In those cases, no one is being required to do anything. If you told guys that they're going to be fined if they don't aim right, not clear how much of an effect that would have. But sometimes if you give people freedom of choice, ultimately it's up to them, but you focus their attention in a good way, or you make it so that if they don't do anything at all, something good rather than bad happens, you can have good outcomes. And to say that Democrats and Republicans might be able to unite on this, where they've been fighting so horribly in the past decades is kind of realistic. We got a Pension Protection Act in 2006, not the most publicized law, but it's actually making people's lives a lot better. The Pension Protection Act is making it easier for employers to offer these plans that make people automatically enrolled in savings. So I think Senator McCain will like some nudges, and Senators Obama and Clinton too.
We've got about a minute left, and I understand you give policy advice to Barack Obama from time to time. So does that mean if he manages to win the White House, we're going to be seeing some nudgenomics?
I think we might see a little bit. And here's what Senator Obama likes, transparency and disclosure. So it sounds a little, technical and maybe not like the most exciting thing in the world. But for the mortgage crisis that the country's been in, a lot can be done just by making it possible for consumers to decide which mortgage is best, by having regulation that gives simple, plain disclosure so you can get people actually competing with one another rather than manipulating home buyers. So for mortgages and credit markets, the credit card problem, where people often are getting exploited, let's say, or maybe worse, what Obama likes is getting it so that consumers know what they're getting into, a kind of new policy of transparency, which he would apply both to government itself and where things are going wrong to the private sector.
Cass, thank you so much for joining us. And here's just a free one from me to you in the people crossword puzzle this week. Lorna Luft is five across.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
I got stuck on that.
Sure. Yeah, it was a tough one. Cass Sunstein is a professor of law at the University of Chicago. His new book, co-authored with economist Richard Thaler, is called Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness. For more about him, please visit our website. I will nudge you there. It's at morefairgame.org.